All right, welcome to a Canadian Patriot podcast where I am extremely happy to be joined here today with Randy Hillier, somebody who has been a real voice of conscience for Canadians, really since he set foot into the political realm, as the perennial outsider who was really a gadfly, always bringing conversation that was not supposed to happen in polite society when everyone just really wanted to go along to get along. Randy wouldn't let that happen. Whether he was while he was a member with the provincial conservatives, or when he was liberated from that and became an independent, we saw Randy especially in the course of the freedom fight with the Freedom Convoy, and he was one of the only people on the federal level who took a stand and actually said, "Hey, I'm with you," and encouraged the people to really resist tyranny. So thank you, Randy, for taking the time. I'm really, really happy that we're gonna have this short conversation.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Matt, and with your audience. I'm here at Scuttlebutt Lodge, my camp in Lanark County, and still fighting for freedom and still exposing the fakery and the fraud and the con of the last number of years. And of course, well, it predates COVID, the fakery and the fraud, and the corruption in our political system and indeed our country. So great to be with you.
Absolutely. And that actually brings up the first major point that I really wanted to just get your thoughts on. Something caught me by surprise. I think a lot of Canadians were caught a little bit by surprise. I didn't imagine that this was going to occur, but I think it was on the 26th, a federal court judge or the federal the a federal judge from the federal court, a very, very, very high court in Canada, made a ruling that the Emergencies Act that was invoked to conduct a vast clampdown, freeze bank accounts of Canadian patriots who had participated in any way in the Freedom Convoy. Many of these people were clamped down upon violently. Many bank accounts were frozen. Other things happened that really destroyed civil liberties. And this judge declared it to be unconstitutional. Now, this has resulted in a massive, scandalous uproar. Chrystia Freeland gave an absurdly passive aggressive speech, as she can only do, say how necessary it was and how the federal government is going to contest this. But what is your take on this? What does this mean for Canadians in the world? Like, what how did this even happen? What's your take on this?
So let's start off with the decision itself. And it's more than just that it was unconstitutional. Justice Mosley, in his 200-page decision, very clearly indicates and illustrates that the invoking of the Emergency Measures Act by Justin Trudeau was a fraudulent exercise. It was a fake emergency created by Prime Minister Trudeau and others. And of course, we shouldn't be surprised that we have a fake emergency during a fake pandemic while we're forcing and coercing people to take a fake vaccine. But I think I should just, before I read and illustrate why I say that, we were very fortunate to have a Superior Court Justice Mosley, who is a retired judge hearing this case. And why that is important is Mosley was beyond his career. He was retired. He's what's called a supernumerary judge. He could no longer be penalized or rewarded for his decision, unlike so many other judges that have heard the similar cases. So he could afford to be fair. He could afford to be honest. And because, like I said, he's retired, the federal government, the judicial council, nobody could sanction him, and nobody could reward him. So a tip of my hat and gratitude for Justice Mosley. But I want to just take a couple elements out of his decision for people to ponder. And like I said, it was a very detailed, high, in my view, a very high caliber decision, which will be very difficult for any other court to overturn. But in section paragraph 255 of his decision, he says, for these reasons, I conclude that there was no national emergency justifying the invocation of the Emergencies Act, and the decision to do so, therefore, unreasonable and ultra vires. So for people who aren't familiar with these Latin legal terms, ultra vires is indicates or states that the government had no lawful authority to invoke the act, right? They were acting beyond their legislated or statutory authorities allow. Let me just read one or two others. While these events are concerning, the record does not support a conclusion that the convoy had created a critical, urgent, or temporary situation that was national in scope and could not effectively be dealt with under any other laws in Canada. So the convoy, again, this is important. The convoy, contrary to Justin Trudeau's assertion that it was an insurrection and an occupation and an attempt to overthrow our democracy, which was all bullshit. But this judge recognizes it was bullshit, and he said, does not support the conclusion had created a critical or urgent situation. Then one more. This is paragraph 297. And I have those links on my various channels, and we should include this link on this podcast as well.
Okay.
For people to read the entire decision. For these reasons, I'm also satisfied that the governor and council, that's cabinet, the executive branch, did not have reasonable grounds to believe that a threat to national security existed within the meaning of the act. So those are just a few of them. There's, but they're key. And he goes on further, but we'll leave it at that for the time being. This is what I mean by Justin Trudeau creating a fake emergency. There was actually no evidence of a threat or a danger that was critical to the country. And as I said to you, Matt, let's not be surprised that people who are dishonest and lie, like our Prime Minister did during the Emergency Act, this was just another lie to cover up the previous and big lie that there was a pandemic. That was another fake emergency that Justin Trudeau declared and others. And of course, that was all to propagate and promote fear into people and coerce them to take a fake injection, a fake vaccine, so that others could profit from the fear that had been created in Canada and the Western world.
If somebody were to push back on you a little bit and say, but wasn't there a pandemic? Wasn't there millions of deaths? What sort of evidence could you throw back in their face to situate some reality back into that and substantiate what you just said that some might see as an inflammatory thing?
Well, all I could offer up is government statistics and data. You know, we do know that the first year of the so-called pandemic here in Canada, and this is similar from around the world, there was 15,600 COVID identified deaths in the entire country, right? And we also know that anybody with any ailment, if they had this phony PCR test indicate that they were had COVID, they were recognized as COVID death, even if they had gotten into a motorcycle accident, or if they were had significant other comorbidities, whether it be cancer or diabetes or whatever. But here's the real kicker. The average age of death in Canada from COVID was 83.6 years of age, beyond the average expected life expectancy of Canadians. So, right. You know, I could go on and on about the fakery of the pandemic, but the data is there.
Yeah.
It's there and available to anybody who wishes to be inquisitive or curious. It's just a fact. Under no objective measure could we call that a pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you just threw out a couple of nuggets for people to think about. But I would also say to Denis Rancourt, Dr. Denis Rancourt from the University of Ottawa, has produced incredible data sets and studies proving irrefutably that there was no excess all-cause mortality as well in at any moment before the actual vaccination rollout. But before that, I think we had greater all-cause mortality in like 2018 than we did in 2020, the year of death when the Black Plague swept over. So it really just demonstrated that, yes, there was a spike due to what you just said, the manipulation of statistics, and then also people being artificially isolated. All sorts of weird things were being done for the first, you know, month or two, resulting in a spike, especially in the highly vulnerable. But that was an incredible irony, what you just said. The average age is 83.6 years of age COVID death. That's actually, it's scary funny in a weird, sick way.
Demonstrates that it was a con.
Yeah.
The whole pandemic was a COVID con job on the people in the Western world. And, you know, there's so much evidence of the fakery there. In an actual pandemic, in an actual crisis, the last thing any reasonable person would do is censor others from having a discussion and analyzing the facts objectively. Like, you don't silence conversation in a pandemic. You actually want to facilitate and encourage discussion so that you can find out how to deal with it effectively or properly. So between censorship, between the fake PCR test, which is well established now, the fake rapid tests that are well established now, and now that we see the excess mortality, more people are dying now than during the COVID pandemic after they have had the apparent cure administered to them, in oftentimes in a very coercive manner, that more people are dying now. But our governments, our media, our public institutions are loath and apprehensive to actually investigate this excess deaths now. But that all goes back to, you know, the invocation of the Emergency Act was a fraud by Trudeau, and it was a fraud, it was a lie to help try to cover up all his previous lies and all his previous frauds. I don't know if you were there, Matt. I was there. I was there for many weeks.
Yeah,
I have many criminal charges as a result of me being there. Hopefully I'll have Mosley as a trial judge when my criminal charges come up. But, it was a exhilarating, joyous, exuberant, family-friendly expression of Canadian love and interactions. It was, and that was called an insurrection, and it's still called an occupation, like as if Parliament in Ottawa was under siege by the enemy. This was Canadian truckers, Canadian families who were in the commons of the country, expressing opposition to a government policy. And that was wholly dangerous and a threat to Justin Trudeau's fraud and his fakery and his lies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well said. And you had said something in a speech that really caught my attention once when you said, truth doesn't mind being questioned, lies don't like being challenged. And I think what you just said, it encapsulates that very, very clearly. In the case of Judge Mosley's, what he's just done, will this, in your mind, provide a gateway for people like Tamara Litch? Or, I mean, there's still several political prisoners, Chris Carbett and others in currently, I mean, that are still prisoners that have not actually faced trial. Dana Lee recently, I think that there was some positive motion on Dana Lee's case. Do you think that this is going to really offer them a major support, or will this not change their situation and their predicament?
Well, that's too broad of it will have an impact of some significance on everyone. This is a Superior Court decision. So it stands. The lower courts, like the Ontario Court of Justice and others, have to take note of it. And it establishes now as a fact that is contrary to the government's assertion in all these criminal cases that indeed there was an occupation. It will also probably have an impact on the $300 million civil case in Ottawa as well, that many people are named into. But, you know, it's whether or not it's... But this will also take a little bit of time for it to percolate through, to get more exposure in the courts, to have it examined in greater detail by the courts before we can say how much of an impact it's going to be. But it will, it's certainly not going to hurt anybody who, and like myself and like, you know, hundreds of others who are still facing criminal charges in Ottawa, in Windsor, in Coutts. The Crowns, who we know are also covering up for the political masters, this is going to put them in a more tenuous position to advance this this false narrative of a siege and an occupation without question.
Right. Because, of course, and that's a key point, is that this is part of a broader strategy. That's important to keep that battle terrain in mind, because this was supposed to be a precedent that would then create a legal justification for all future uses of this sort of thing. Freezing of bank. We've already heard Chrystia Freeland saying early on that this was a tool that they created that can be wielded in the future. That was an early speech that she had given after freezing bank accounts, implying that there was an intention to utilize this as a legal precedent in the future. And now this has been removed by the Judge Mosley doing what he did. Now it's not really a precedent.
I would say it wasn't a tool. Hmm. It was a weapon. That's, again, one of Freeland's and our political masters' lies. This was not a tool. They were arbitrarily unconstituted, and that, again, it goes more to Mosley's decision. And let me just see here. He's in a number of items, 341. I find the failure to require some objective standard be satisfied before the accounts were frozen breached Section 8 of the Constitution of the Charter of Rights. And there's a number of these things. So you cannot create a tool or a weapon if you know, that is unconstitutional. And all these, you know, Lametti, all of them knew what they were doing was duplicitous at best, outright criminal in all likelihood, that, but they did it anyway. They would go to any length to cover up the first lie and the second lie, of COVID, the pandemic, the vaccines. And they're not willing to let go. I suspect that this decision will stand, but these liars will have already announced that they're going to try to overturn it.
Yeah, right. So I guess rounding this out, obviously, this has forced, once again, some important conversation and some important uncomfortable facts out of the darkness into the light, which is good. A lot of citizens and policymakers who have a conscience anywhere in Canada on any level can obviously use this and work with this. Where do you think, what sort of advice or guidance do you think citizens should take in mind, considering what would be the next strategic place to go with this? I know in the case of Slovakia, Robert Fico announced that there's a COVID inquiry that is going to be sanctioned by the government of Slovakia into all of the lies. It's very comprehensive, that went into what was this thing called a pandemic, what were the vaccines, who got payouts, all of these things. So that'll be a whole nation will be providing national support to that sort of thing. Do you think that that's a line that should be pressed upon for Canadians to have a Canadian COVID inquiry on that level? Or do you think there's something else?
So I think so, and I stated so when I had started up the end of lockdown caucus, both myself, I was elected in the Ontario legislature. Derek Sloan was still a elected MP in the House of Commons. We both advanced concurrent motions to have a Royal Commission of Inquiry into the COVID pandemic and the frauds associated with it back in 2021. Obviously, that didn't go anywhere. And we have a big challenge in this country because all established political parties were in on the con, all of them, whether it's the Conservatives, whether it's the NDP or the Liberals. Federally and provincially, they were all in on it. They all are going to do their utmost to keep their skullduggery hidden from view. But I think it's important for all Canadians to continue to hammer on for an inquiry. I think when the evidence comes out from the Slovakian inquiry, and as more and more evidence becomes revealed to us, I hope that Canadians will go to battle once more and express themselves significantly, that we're not going to sit back and be quiet while this fraud happened. People need to be held to account. And it has to be an authoritative inquiry, not as much as I appreciate the volunteer and the public participation in things like the NCI. This needs to be an authoritative inquiry, one that we have confidence that the people involved are people of the highest integrity, people who can afford to be honest, like Mosley chairing it, not another puppet or pawn who wants to climb the judicial ladder like Rollo, and have a real inquiry that has teeth, that has authority, that can compel the truth to be revealed and known to all Canadians.
Do you think that it were more likely at this point that something like this would emerge as a provincial initiative, maybe from perhaps Alberta or something, rather than it happening first on the federal level? Since I don't necessarily see at the moment a configuration of honest brokers that would participate on an official level on the federal government side of things, but perhaps on the provincial level, I could see it a bit more clearly. Or do you think it would just, am I thinking about it wrong? And it should just be more out of the box.
Listen, you know, I don't want to be too cynical, but I think to be a realist here, on the federal side, until we get some elected members that either have some balls or a backbone, which, you know, that will require either independent members elected to the House of Commons or members of a non-established party like the PPC. If they get a few people elected, then the pressure can be mounted from within the federal parliament. But it would take either or both of those situations or circumstances to develop it. Either some independent candidates get elected or from a lesser known party like the PPC that are known to be opposed to the fraud. At the provincial level, we have a similar problem, but we have a little more hope. There is an upstart political party in Saskatchewan called the Saskatchewan United Party, which has been doing very well. Their leader, Nadine Wilson, has been very outspoken. But it'll be some time before they have a general election in Saskatchewan, but they've done very well in some of the by-elections there. So that's a glimmer of hope. I have to say, many people who share my views and optimism about Danielle Smith in Alberta, she's not done much to keep us optimistic about her actions in Alberta. But, you know, hopefully the people in Alberta will continue to apply pressure on her to have an inquiry. But those are in Ontario, the established parties were all in on it, the NDP, Liberal, and Conservatives. In BC, there is another little glimmer of hope. The BC Conservatives, which have only one seat at the moment, but they seem to be gaining significant ground. And they're likely to keep applying the pressure. So there are some glimmers of hope. And I would say everybody has a duty. If they want to end this fakery in our political system, to end this fraud of our political system, you need to get on the phone, call your elected members. You need to go down and visit them and have a conversation with them. Bring some facts and some knowledge with you. Send them emails and continue to apply pressure and knowledge. You know, like, I want to make this clear to people. Like, although there is a great fraud happening in our political system, that's not to suggest that every elected member is part of the fraud. They just haven't got the backbone and the conviction or the knowledge to be able to speak up. And therefore are less of an elected representative than they ought to be, in my view. But we need to continue to encourage them. And as I said, the evidence as it comes out will be more revealing. And, you know, we have a big COVID summit at the end of February in Washington, International COVID Summit being held in conjunction with the CPAC political convention the last week of February, and some additional Senate hearings on the COVID con happening on February 26th in Washington. So These things will, more and more information will be coming out. We saw the Fauci, how the Fauci testimony will be, there'll be public testimony on that later this spring. He had no scientific evidence to do the things that he did. The Auditor General in New Brunswick came out with a scathing report on the COVID pandemic measures in New Brunswick just in November, where he said 33 public policies and mandates imposed by the New Brunswick government had no scientific justification or evidence to back them up.
Wow.
So there are all these little elements out there, but it requires a full court press by the Canadian public to make it, to make it happen. Just like in February of 2022, that was a major league full court press in Ottawa, and it resulted in many of the mask, vaccine, curfew mandates being repealed when the public showed the politicians they were going to stand their ground.
Absolutely. No, I think that that's a perfect way to wrap this up. And I would just say, yeah, the idea of being simply an having your actions animated by knowledge, do the work. It's all very accessible. I mean, anybody who wants to know can read Denis Rancourt's reports, their public knowledge. They can be informed about the world situation, what's going on in Slovakia. They can know about this court case. There's going to be many links in the description box under this video for people who want to read Judge Mosley's findings. We're going to have a link directly to that. Be informed, but then take strategic action. You know, one of the things I was the most impressed by going into, I spent a couple of days in Ottawa in February of 2022, and I didn't know what to expect. And I wasn't sure if this was going to be full of provocateurs, full of, shady instigators that would try to take this and make it look like something violent. We know in hindsight, there were pallets of bricks laid out conveniently. We did have people who went in as provocateurs, like we did in the case of the United States when something similar was being manipulated. But people were intelligent. They didn't fall for any of the bait. They kicked out the one or two cases where you had some masked fellow walking in with shady white supremacist signage. He was immediately kicked out. These things were identified. People were filming the pallets of bricks to make it be known that, look, we know that there's no construction happening here. There's no reason why this would be located where it is. And there was a good quality of wisdom organizing the strategic action that was taken when it did. And it bore results that reverberated all around the world, to the point that today we have farmers in Germany, in Belgium, in France, who have Canadian flags still inspired by the Canadian experience, which changed policy in a major, major way. And we're doing it again, as we see with Judge Mosley's very courageous decision. So it's really great that you just went through what you did, and important to keep in mind for Canadians who sometimes get a little disheartened by the level of the corruption and blindness, that it's not simply a linear process. Nobody could foresee that was going to happen the way it did. We don't know what necessarily is going to happen in Washington, as you just pointed out. We don't know if the U.S. can even, if the U.S. is able to keep itself together, and we find in 10 months, all of a sudden, a new government, maybe Trump comes back, who knows? That's going to completely change the dynamic in terms of what we're dealing with here contextually in Canada. Many things that can't happen today can happen under new dynamics internationally. We're part of a chemistry. So there's all sorts of layers of reality to hold in mind.
So let me. There's three items there. First off, with as far as gaining knowledge, easy to do. You're not going to get it from the mainstream media. You're not going to get it from CBC or CTV or Global, because they were complicit in the fakery and the fraud as well. They were great promoters of the COVID con. This can be done. Yeah, you know, you can learn about it. You can take action about it. Let me put it this way. The way to challenge this is, we shouldn't be surprised again that there was a fake pandemic. We've had fakery and fraud doomsdays for a long time in this country. The Y2K, global warming, climate change, the population bomb. There's been a great deal of fake messaging for a long time in Western society. Hell, we even have fake women now. We have fake marriages. We have, fake. There's so much that is fake. We have fake conservative parties. We have fake liberal parties. Don't believe the government's narrative. Believe what you see. Just like in COVID, they were showing us films and videos of people dropping dead. Nobody in Canada ever saw that. These were manufactured fakes, right? So you can't listen to the con man and think that you're going to get an honest answer. Go elsewhere to get your knowledge. Reject the fakery and accept the reality. Connect up the dots. It's not that hard. And have the courage to do so.
It's not that hard. Have courage. Randy Hillier, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing the wisdom. We'll look forward to hearing more of your speeches, your remarks, your interventions. And like I said, anybody who wants to follow up and do a bit more firsthand research on some of the items that we talked about, go to the description box under this video. Thank you so much. Till next time.
Can I add one? I'll add one thing. Yes. If you want to help me out, I'm representing myself against these criminal charges and many other charges. If you want to help me out, or you go to my website, nomorelockdowns.ca, help out on my legal defense. Or if you want to spend some time and get away and have some freedom, Scuttlebutt Lodge is available for rent for freedom-minded people as well. And that's you can reserve on the No More Lockdowns website as well. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. No, thank you. Thank you so much. All right. Till next time.